The biggest issue in this campaign is going to be the economy.
I need your vote. But what's at stake in this election is the definition and the identity of our country and of our party.
People say, well, is there violence? There's no violence. There's love fest. These are love fest.
Well, guess what? We have a good vote tomorrow. People come out. We're going to win here in Ohio.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It's 5:09, and today is Tuesday, Election Day. It's March 15th, 2016. Polls open shortly, about an hour or so, I believe, here in Illinois. And on the markets today, all the arrows are lower. Is there a correlation between Election Day and the markets? Probably not, but it's still causing jitters around the world as America votes for a new leader. Generally, the president doesn't sell a lot of economic policy, but it is important that you get out and vote because, as you heard Hillary say there, whoever is the next president will have to deal with the ongoing economic crisis, the economic turmoil around the world. So how bad is it this morning? You heard Vic mention a few of the numbers. In Asia this morning, all of the indices, the ones that are open at least, are lower. In Europe, all of them are lower as well, with the FTSE leading the band off about 110 points this morning. The DAX in Germany is off as well. The Dow futures are off nearly 70 points this morning. The S&P futures and NASDAQ futures are off about 10 and 20 points, respectively. Here's your from the WGN market desk, the global intel this morning. You heard the Asian stock markets there. The Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee is meeting today and tomorrow. That always causes investors to be a little jittery. Investors don't expect a rate hike, but they are watching for some indications of future moves by the Fed. In December, you'll remember the Fed raised interest rates for the first time in almost a decade, but it left them unchanged in January. U.S. stocks barely budged yesterday. Declines by energy companies were offset by gains for hotels and travel-related companies. This morning, the dollar weakened against the yen and the euro. The benchmark U.S. crude oil figure this morning, $37 a barrel. Here's what's coming up today. The Commerce Department's going to release retail sales data for February, business inventories for January. The Labor Department releases the Producer Price Index for February. The National Association of Home Builders releases its Housing Market Index for March. And the Treasury Department releases foreign holdings data for January. So a lot of economic reports that could impact the markets today. Does the government need to start regulating the self-driving car industry, or is it too soon? That's one of the questions lawmakers are going to be considering today at a Senate committee hearing. ABC's Bazi Kanani is in Washington, where she's been monitoring that story this morning for us.
Google is testing a self-driving car with no steering wheel or pedals. Some think lawmakers should act now to require those features on self-driving cars, even though the technology is still evolving and none are being sold to consumers. Executives from Google, GM, and Delphi Automotive are among those set to testify in the Senate committee hearing. Bazi Kanani, ABC News, Washington.
Outraged by all of the fees that we've been charging for airlines, those fees for bags, everything from chips to you name it. Two senators have launched what is called the No More Ridiculous Imposing Ridiculous Fees Act. It's Forbidding Airlines from Imposing Ridiculous Fees Act. The bill is nicknamed FAIR and would ban fees that are not reasonable and proportional to all of the other costs incurred by this. It could be a long shot, but that's our main topic this morning. And we're joined by Bloomberg Businessweek aviation travel reporter Justin Bachman at Justin Bachman on Twitter. Good morning, Justin. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, well, the name of the act sort of lends to the first question, and is this a serious move? Is this going to go anywhere?
Well, it is a serious move on their part, but as far as whether it goes anywhere, that's a much, much bigger question. And right now, the prospects don't look great.
We're going to get into more of the nuts and bolts in this coming up, but how bad is the problem, according to these senators? Why are they deciding to do this now?
Well, I mean, the thing is, this has been somewhat building for years. Airlines have not had a lot of luck in recent years raising fares, which have been flat since about 2010. But what they can do is raise these fees, and that's where we've been seeing revenue growth for the airlines. And I think it's at a point where consumers have probably said this has gotten really, really out of hand when, you know, the first bag is $25. The second bag at some airlines can be $100. And change fees can go up to $200 just to change your ticket.
And these airlines, most of the airlines are enjoying record profits, aren't they?
They are, and one reason for that is because they have baggage and other fees built into, you know, the business model now. 10, 15 years ago, airlines did not have this, and now we're talking about over $5 billion a year, which is, you know, quite a bit of money.
We're talking with Justin Bachman of Bloomberg Businessweek, airline fees bill that's in the Senate pending that would limit some of these airline fees. We'll get into more of this as our conversation continues here on The Opening Bell coming up. But right now, let's break for traffic. And good morning, Mary Vandevelle.
Tune to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 518. Welcome back to the program. We're talking about the airline fees being charged by some air carriers. And on the program today is Justin Bachman, who has written about this in Bloomberg Business, an aviation and travel reporter. And Justin, before the break, we were talking about just how much money the airlines had been pulling in from this. Some of the figures that you quote in your story and elsewhere show about a 1,400% in increase in fees from 2007 to 2014. These lawmakers may have a silly name to this law, but there is something going on here is it greedy? I'm trying to pick a word for it.
Well, I don't know if the word is greedy. I mean, they're charging what the market will bear. And you got to remember that increase is based on the fact that it went from zero to where we are now. So, you know, I think a lot of it is really, you know, the airline saying we've got to get our financial business model in order, and the fees have become a very critical component to doing that.
Well, when you say that it's what the market can bear, I mean, is that really fair? Because we really don't have a choice when it comes to flying airlines. It's not like we can go to another. I mean, the competition is such that they all charge these fees, right?
Right, they do. Southwest is not. You don't see a lot of these fees at Southwest, which has decided to compete on a, you know, at a different level. And they actually will tell you all the time, we don't charge for bags. But as far as, you know, your point on the consolidation in the industry, that's very much true. We've gone from about 8 big airlines to 4 now. And I think that's partially what's driving legislation like this, is the fact that consumers don't have as many choices as they once did. And, you know, with big airlines, you know, pushing their muscle around, there's going to be a response.
Could that be also what's happening sort of in the undercurrent here, is that some of these lawmakers maybe are shooting a warning shot across the bow about possibly going back to those days of regulation?
I think that they're probably not. You know, the threat of regulation is not really that big, but I think there is definitely a warning shot aspect of this to say, look, you know, Congress can do a lot of things when it comes to airlines without regulating the industry. And, you know, I think that, you know, partially you're right. There is a certain warning aspect to this legislation.
Because we also saw one of the other senators, Chuck Schumer, recently say that he was going to hold up the FAA authorization bill because of the size of seats. He can't fit in them because he's a tall guy. A lot of us can't fit in those seats. So there's something going on here. Do you think any of these things will come together to amount to anything in an election year?
In an election year, no. I think that, you know, what we're talking about is a multi-year effort where there will slowly be, you know, consumer pushbacks, and airlines will, you know, yield where they need to. You know, one of the arguments about the seat size is, can you get out of an airplane like that in an emergency? So if you raise the safety aspect of this, then suddenly you're talking about, you know, kind of a little bit different twist on the argument. So we could see that gain traction over time.
Yeah, it's a little easier to argue the safety of seats, but chips, the fees you pay for chips, your bags, that really doesn't impact your safety on an airline, does it?
Right now, it doesn't. It really kind of just impacts the way you feel about the airline when you're flying it.
Yeah. So who is the worst in your reporting, did you find, among the airlines with fees?
Well, I mean, as far as worst, it's hard to say, but what you see with these fees is really the airlines that fly the most people are the ones that collect the most fee revenue, just by the fact that they have the most audience. So you're looking at American, which merged with U.S. Airways, is now the world's largest airline, and they're leading on a fee basis. But, you know, Delta is right there at number two. So they're the second largest airline. So you really see it stack up against who has the most customers.
And if, you know, if people were really angry about this, I guess this goes back to what the market can bear issue. As we look ahead to the spring, the airlines are booking pretty good. They have, an estimate of about 63,000 passengers, more passengers a day than they did last year, 140 passengers alone this month. So people are flying, right?
People are flying. Domestic demand has held up remarkably well this year and last year. And the records, yeah, you're talking about this month and next month on a combined basis you'll be at a record high. So, you know, people are still flying no matter how much they like to grumble about it.
There's this issue also, the side issue, when we talked about regulation of the air traffic control system and privatization of that. Is this somehow connected to that issue?
It is, just in the sense that, you know, legislators with different issues are attaching their issue to the FAA reauthorization bill. So this comes up every few years when Congress needs to fund the FAA. And so what happened this year, the big change is the airlines, with the exception of Delta, want to privatize air traffic control. So that's part of the bill. And then the senators that introduced the fees legislation are talking about making that part of the bill. Schumer's, you know, effort would also be part of that. So really everything kind of coalesces around the FAA reauthorization.
Is there a wave of interest because also the price of fuel is falling and the price of oil is low, and eventually that's sort of going to be shown up on the airline's books and they're going to end up making more money? How does that play into this discussion?
Oh, it's already showed up on the books. And I mean, it's been a multi-billion dollar benefit for most of the past 2 years. And that's another kind of reason that's driving this, is people say, look, airlines are making record profits. The jet fuel is very low. So why aren't my fares coming down? Why aren't the fees coming down? Why aren't they giving me a break? And, you know, it really goes back to supply and demand, which you mentioned, the demand is very high right now.
The two senators involved in this, Edward Markey of Massachusetts, Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, are they close to maybe pulling this to a hearing? Has it even gotten to that level yet? Will it get to that level?
It's not gotten to that level yet, but it's gotten a lot of attention in the media. So I think that they would call it a success at this point because, you know, people are talking about it. And if you start a conversation, that's generally how things over time can happen in Congress.
It's called the Forbidding Airlines from Imposing Ridiculous Fees Act, otherwise known as FAIR. Justin Bachman of Bloomberg Business has written about this. We're going to link to your story. Justin, good of you to be with us on the opening bell today.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
It's 5:26. You can find Justin on Twitter at Justin Bachman. And, of course, businessweek.com and Bloomberg Business at Business on Twitter. This is the opening bell. It's 5:26 on this Tuesday morning. Let's head over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn is standing by. Vic, a busy day. It's election day.
What? It is, yes. Big primary election day. It's finally here. We're going to also tell people who may not know where to vote. There are, I'm sure, a few of them. We are going to tell them how to find their polling station. We also have three officers recovering in the hospital this morning after being shot. We're going to have all of that coming up.
All right. Vic Vaughn in the newsroom. We'll have the news for you coming up shortly. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. It's a battle of man versus machine, and this time, man won. The AlphaGo program is the brainchild of Google's DeepMind division. It's basically a computer that uses artificial intelligence and other Google technologies to take on human opponents in the complex strategy-based Chinese board game called Go. But in Seoul, South Korea, this past Sunday, Korean Go champion Lee Sedol bested the computer. Addressing reporters after the game, Sedol said he felt stressed over losing his first three matchups with AlphaGo. But the stress faded after his victory in Game 4. For its part, Google's chief executive in charge of DeepMind said his team is grateful to Sedol for his creative genius.
This is why we came here, to test AlphaGo to its limits and find out what its weaknesses were so we can try and improve the program.
With Tech Trends, I'm Joan Bennett, ABC News.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:36 here on the opening bell. It's called March Madness or the Big Dance. But to many sports fans, it's a lot like Christmas. That's what RetailMeNot.com has found. The organization, the website is one of the leading. It describes itself as one of the leading digital savings destinations, connecting consumers with retailers, restaurants, and brands. And this morning here on the opening bell to talk about some of the findings that they have discovered from a new survey is Clendon Ross. Clendon, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Hey, good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. You're also a sports commentator, so you kind of know your stuff, you know, your way around sports and retail. So what have you guys found? I mean, are people really spending this much money on March Madness?
Yeah, the RetailMeNot survey that found that people that are willing to spend money on March Madness related expenses are willing to spend $211 this year. That's, you know, quite a pretty significant amount of money that they're willing to spend, and it's spending on all kinds of different things. It's spending on parties to watch their teams. It's spending on TVs. It's spending on travel, and it's also, of course, spending on brackets. And we found that people are willing to spend $90 on brackets. That's a little rich for my blood, but that's the average spend on brackets this year. It's a lot.
When you say spend money on brackets, this is like joining a pool.
Yeah, absolutely. Joining your office pool, and you know, I think we all have experienced that walking around the office this time of the year. There are people totally into this, and it's just a cultural phenomenon, and people are willing to spend money on it.
I know we don't have any of those here at WGN, just so everybody is clear on that. But Steve, maybe we'll show you a little later what exactly Clendon's talking about here.
Dave Ennett, our sports director here at WGN, is joining our conversation. Clendon, you know, we're doing this here today. Nobody told me anything about money. Do I have to pay $90, Dave?
No, there's no money changing hands here. That actually seems fairly rich by our standards, Clendon.
Hey, it's totally rich by my standards as well, Dave, but you're absolutely right about people at the office. That if you walk around this week, Thursday and Friday when the games start, what our survey found is that over 20% of the people will be watching the games at work. So if they cover their screen up when you walk by, it probably means they're streaming it on their computer.
Well, of course, you don't have to really watch it on your computer. You can watch it on your smartphone, maybe some sort of real compact device anymore.
Your iWatch or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say your Apple Watch. I don't know. I'm trying mine. I can't seem to pick it up yet. But the NCAA has made the tournament so available that it's very easy for people in the workplace to watch the games. It used to be you had to kind of duck out early on that Thursday at 11 o'clock when the game started and go somewhere where they had a satellite dish so you could watch all the games. It's not that way anymore.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we found in previous surveys that people told us they would be willing to go to bars or restaurants or whatever during the workday. But you're right. Nowadays, people can watch it on their smartphone, tablet, on their computer. There's all kinds of ways to follow the event now.
And every year we hear about the lost work productivity that comes along with March Madness. I'm surprised that employers haven't cracked down yet. But then again, can they really?
I don't think they can, again, just because it's so easy to get the information now and get it in so many different ways. And, you know, I think it's kind of a fun thing. It can bring offices together in a way. A lot of people are involved, and you don't have to be somebody that's a sports fan necessarily to participate. So I think it can be something that, at least for a few days, can bring the office together.
I don't know. I felt, Dave, a little threatened from Andrea yesterday. You know, she's always the big winner in our pool here.
And no, she's not always, but go ahead.
No, I just felt a little like she was bullying me a little because she said, you know, I won last year. So, you know, that's the work. You know, Clendon, you also found, this survey also found people not only spend money on the brackets, but they're doing other things too. I mean, how else are they spending their money in association with March Madness?
They spend it in a lot of different ways. This is such an exciting time of the year for sports fans, where your team doesn't have to be a number one or a number two seed or one of the favorites in the tournament to have some success. We see it year after year, and that's part of the reason why it's so exciting. So people throw parties to watch their teams play. They travel. They spend money on, you know, things like pizza and all the things that go along with parties when you watch your team play. So there's just a lot of TVs, as I mentioned earlier. It's like just a ton of different things that people are willing to spend money on.
I'd like to know how much of this money is actually spent in Vegas. And I'm not talking about gambling, but as a destination during the tournament, because that's become bigger and bigger probably over the last 20 years or so, where where people go to Las Vegas because obviously they can bet on the games there, but it's also become a gathering place to watch the tournament, and it's become a real destination.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's fascinating when you're in Vegas watching games because you can sit in one spot and have humongous TVs in front of you playing every single game that's going on. And, you know, for the first couple of days of the tournament, there's 16 games each day. So unless you're in a place like that and have multiple TVs, you can't see them all. So, you're right. It's a great destination to be able to watch everything that's going on over those exciting first few days.
Is there anything that compares to this around the globe, or is this sort of a unique thing for America and the NCAA?
I think the biggest worldwide sporting event is the World Cup, and I think you see people around the world follow the World Cup similar to what they do to NCAA basketball here. But I think the difference here is it's so compact. The NCAA tournament, like I mentioned, that first couple of days, it's just 16 games on Thursday, 16 games on Friday, 8 on Saturday, 8 on Sunday. It's just real compact time frame, which has all of these teams playing, and it's win or go home. So you have to win, and if you don't win, you're out. So it's a fascinating sporting event, and one of the biggest in the world, I think, next to the World Cup.
Yeah. This, Dave, is also an opportunity for the NCAA to showcase itself and what it's doing.
Well, I think, and Clint, you can speak to this also, I think in the advertising and the messages which turn up during the telecast, they are trying to get out the message the NCAA is, not just the commercials, but the message we always hear repeated over and over that most of us are going to major in something other than our sport or something along that lines. That's the message they're trying to get out there. We're going to turn pro in something other than our college major.
Well, I mean, these truly are student athletes by and large. I mean, we're talking about 64 or 68 teams in the field. And again, a lot of these teams are teams that have no players that have any pro prospects whatsoever. They're not going to be NBA stars. So you're right. It is a showcase of amateur athletics, but again, even though it's amateur athletics, as we've been talking about, it's extremely big business.
And Clendon, based on the results of the survey from Retail Me Not, it might be a good idea to perhaps major in sports retail.
Absolutely. Marketing. There's going to be lots of commerce going on around sports over the next 2 weeks.
Clendon Ross is a sports commentator also with RetailMeNot.com. You can find the survey about the Big Dance March Madness retail spending at RetailMeNot.com, and you can also follow them on Twitter as well. Clendon, thank you for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. It's 5:44 on the opening bell, 720 WGN. And
see, you didn't even get into the stuff I thought you were going to get into.
Like,
about the most requested snacks at March Madness parties
are
pizza, 67%, mm-hmm. chips and dip, 63%. See, I thought this was right down your alley.
Well, I mean, these are kind of the standard snacks, I guess.
I think so.
I don't know. The other part of this, too, I think, is, maybe later this week we could talk about the lost productivity. Because usually we see a survey at some point this week, either by Career Builder or one of those surveys, that tells us how much time we're wasting.
There's no lost productivity at WGN Radio. And by the way, you can play our $1 million bracket battle sponsored by Alpamati Ford. Just go to WGNradio.com.
All right. Thanks, Dave Bennett. And it's time for traffic now. Mary Vanderbilt, you have your brackets filled out?
Hold yet? On. I'm in the middle of doing something. Yeah.
Yeah,
got
I
it.
Think you and
okay.
I need to
you take a 12 over a 5, Mayor.
I am doing a lot of upsets this year.
I'll do that.
Yes. My son looked at my brackets yesterday and went, really, Mom? That was not a good sign.
Yeah, I need help, too.
I know. But anyway, it's fun. It's all in good fun. Right, Dave? No.
No.
It's all very competitive for Dave.
With you and me, it is. No. With Andrea, that's a different story.
I know. She just picks anything.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:50 from the WGN Market Desk. Here's some numbers. Futures, Dow futures are 72 points lower this morning. S&P futures off about 11. NASDAQ futures off about 18. Oil trading pre-market at $36.21 a barrel. That's off about a buck. Let's get the latest on some other commodity prices. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where today Capitol Hill salutes the farmers and ranchers, the food producers of America at National Agriculture Day. It started yesterday afternoon in the Hart Senate office building when AgriPulse staged a panel discussion of how sustainability is reframing food. And some interesting people on that panel, including Chris Polasinski, who is president and chief executive officer of Land O'Lakes, Dave White, who is co-founder and partner of the 9B Group, Rod Snyder, president of Field to Market, and Greg Helverson, who is president of Black Gold Farms. That's an egg-producing farm located in Iowa, but operating in other states as well. The entire program put on by Sarah Wyand, who is president and founder of AgriPulse Communications. And while there were some new ideas that were put forth, I must say, the same theme that I've heard for 35 years at agricultural meetings and events. How do we tell our story? Farmers and ranchers have to do a better job of telling consumers five and six generations removed from the farm how farming today is different and how biotechnology is an important part of producing the food needed to feed a growing world population. We get underway this morning with breakfast at the National Press Club, a noontime reception featuring 4-H, FFA, and AFA, along with outstanding young farmers. And then tonight, the Salute to Agriculture Banquet, and I'll be serving as MC for that event. You have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson in our nation's capital.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. The congratulations are in order this morning for several Chicago startups who have been honored at South by Southwest. Harkin is one of just several Chicago success stories at the Big Austin event. Harkin has won at the award. They've won the Bootstrap Award at South by Southwest. Harkin is one of those startups that was, it's a news, generally a news oriented site that was started by the folks over at WBEZ and their Chicago stories. Also, Park Nav is a winner at this year's South by Southwest. They won one of the big innovation awards. Of course, Blue 1647 founder Emil Cambry was honored with the Dewey Winburn Community Service Award. So good showing by folks from Chicago at South by Southwest Conference in Austin, which is still going on. Also, yesterday we saw the launch of something that is going to take, that they say is going to take virtual reality to the next level. It's something called Trailblazer. Imagine, they say, watching frantic shopkeepers busily extinguish the Great Fire of London, or perhaps even sheltering from Nazi bombs. And all you have to do is look through your VR goggles.
Thanks for tuning in to The Trailblazers, where we profile millennial creators whose ventures use tech to drive social good. Let's get right to it. Now, most of us have visited a tourist attraction of some sort, right? And I bet a fair few of you...
That's the promotional video that they launched yesterday. It's called Time Looper, the app available now on the app stores for Google and for iPhone. The Time Looper founder, Andrew Feinberg, says you can visit the Tower of London, maybe an historic castle, the banks of the London's Thames, all of it by looking through your glasses. Wherever you're at on site, if you look through those glasses, it somehow uses GPS to show you where you're at and then takes you back in time. And this is called the Time Looper, and the app is available starting yesterday on the app stores for Google and for iPhone. Well, that's the opening bell for today. Just another reminder, Hillary Clinton is going to be on the Steve Cochran Show later this morning at 8:20. It is Election Day. Get out and vote. Polls are going to be opening shortly here in Illinois, a big day for the state. We will keep you posted through that on that all through the morning, as well as the very latest business news all coming up for you on the Steve Cochran Show. We'll be back tomorrow morning. Thanks to our producer, Mary Sandberg, Ross Cochran with production help, our engineer this morning, Ben Cortez. The opening bell returns bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. Have a great day. It's 5:56.